Welcome to another episode of Differences Not Deficits, where we discuss what we are learning and changing in our therapy so we can support and empower neurodivergent individuals with compassion and respect. Thank you for listening so we can all learn together.
The primary purpose of Differences Not Deficits is to educate and inform. The views expressed during this podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not constitute educational or medical advice. Listeners should consult with their professionals familiar with each individual or family for specific guidance.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Differences Not Deficits. So I'm on my own today because Yolandi is off on an adventure. We'll update you guys about that soon. Hopefully we'll have one with the two of us and Yolandi can share what she's doing. But in the meantime, I had the pleasure of interviewing Caroline Gaddy, and I am so excited to share this with you. So Caroline is an autistic SLP and AAC solutions consultant based in Virginia. She's also a disability advocate and neurodiversity educator who has presented at state and national conferences. She's worked in clinical and school-based settings as an SLP and teacher, and is passionate about communication access, disability justice, and inclusion. Caroline is also a mom to two spectacular neurodivergent kids. This interview will be part one of two. So let's get started. So we are here with Caroline Gaddy. Welcome.
Yawning.
Yawning Caroline Gaddy. Welcome, Caroline.
Thank you. The yawn is not an indication of you.
Thank you.
Just life.
Yes, exactly. Life that keeps us going, right?
It does.
So we just wanted to, or I'm used to saying we, but Yolandi's not here today. So I wanted to start by you just, if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and your story, your journey as an autistic person.
My story is so meandering and long. To chunk it down better, like many people who were not a little white boy, I did not get diagnosed until much later, until after my little white boy son was diagnosed. And he really, we've talked about this many times. You know, obviously he made me a mom and I adore both of my children very, very much. And it's, you know, special that he was the first one, but he also, I've learned a lot about myself because he came into existence. And because he got diagnosed, but also I knew that he was autistic before he was diagnosed. Because of that, you know, I started learning more, like many of us, right? And you go searching, and what comes up is the first stuff that's most funded and is least neurodiversity affirming. And, you know, and so, I mean, I've been down these paths, like so many of us as practitioners, as parents, as, you know, we've been there. And and I also was lucky that I knew disability advocates and people who helped point me in the right direction, and then I could learn from people. And so that by the time I was diagnosed, I was already very active in terms of the neurodiversity movement, already actively learning, already actively part of, you know, trying to do that work. And so, so for me, getting a diagnosis was, you know, kind of like, great, what's next? You know, and by the time my son got his official diagnosis, it was the same thing. We were already so involved in that it, you know, they were like, well, do you need a minute? And I was like, nope, great, thanks. You know, like, it was already set. And it's just, you know, this is just who we are. And I think that I also, he made more sense to me. And so then it started leading to those questions, like, wait a minute, that's not what everybody?
Right.
I did not get that memo. What are we talking about? What did you mean? You cannot hear the lights. What are you talking about?
Wow.
And
wow.
So, and then what really started me questioning was reading about autistic burnout. And once I started reading about that, I really went, okay. Oh, This sounds very familiar. And and that led me to, like I say, learning a lot more about myself. And the really beautiful thing and a reason that I am kind of such a proponent for diagnosis. And when I say diagnosis, I do not just mean that you have to go pay money and get a medical diagnosis. I include self-diagnosis in that statement. But like, I'm such a proponent because I really, you know, I can't remember who says it. I mean, there's variations on it, but I'm going to be wrong about it, so I'm not going to try. But there is somebody, and I just can't credit it properly, I'm sorry, but that who's like, you know, getting diagnosis meant that I am not a broken neurotypical. I am a fully successfully functional neurodivergent person. And that, so for me, that diagnosis was made a lot of sense, but it also helped me get kind of keys to support myself so that I could be more of the person that I wanted to be. And by that, I mean, like, who I mean, both being able to be authentically myself, but also being able to just be the person I want to be and not be like grubby and overstimulated all the time. And like, you know, like, learning those things has really helped me to go, okay, now this is too much sound and I am now wearing my headphones. Like, so, and those are just not things. I did them for my son. I never, you know, I just didn't. And I was so entrenched growing up being raised as neurotypical, and the messaging was so much, you know, that there was something wrong with me, that I had just, you know, stuck it up. You know, this is, you're making this up kind of thing. I just didn't even think, like, there are environments that I go into now. Asha is a really good example. Asha conference I go to, been to many times. I love a conference, man. Give me the swag. Love it. Love the swag. And I love the conversation. Like, I love the education. I love it. I love presenting. But conferences, very overstimulating environments.
Oh, for
much
sure.
Talkies, big sound bouncies, much happening, right? And so, like, I would go and do those things, and I would just be laid out. Like, now I go, I got my, you know, I got my bag of fidgets, I've got three different kinds of ear defenders, I've got, like, every, like, and do I still get depleted? Oh, absolutely. But it is not.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not anything. Because now I know. And I can put my accommodations in place. And I just, so it's a big reason that I'm really, you know, I think there's always a conversation about labels and like, do you need a label or do you not need a label? And on the one hand, I'm like, well, who cares? I'd love to live in a world where labels don't matter. Like, that'd be great. That's not where we are. That's not the world we live in. And and we need to name things to make sense of them, you know?
It's visible. For ourselves and for other people, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I mean, do whatever feels right to you. But for me personally, it made a huge difference. And I was lucky. I was privileged that I kind of was coming through this and getting this information, and me and Rachel and Hillary, we wrote this article, and it started a lot of conversation, or continued a lot of conversation, or helped bring more in depth a lot of conversation, and that was really cool to get to be a part of.
That's really cool. What Caroline is talking about is there was an article that she did, as well as Rachel and Hillary in the ASHA Leader, which is our board for speech language pathologists.
Yeah.
But it's such a great article. I mean, honestly, great article. So, and it was, and I was so excited to see it because I was kind of, you know, really trying to, really learning myself about neurodiversity affirming and really questioning what I was doing as an SLP. So to see that in the ASHA Leader was like, yes, I was really excited.
That was a lot. I mean, there was definitely the opposite response, but there was a lot of that though. There was a lot of people going, I mean, when we presented after we did that article and we presented it, Asha, we got a standing ovation. And I was like,
that's awesome.
What? Yeah, like, I think my face was like, because, I mean, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But, and it's not because I think that we were like the most spectacular ever. I mean, I'm very proud of our presentation, but like, it's not that we were sharing information that, you know, came from advocates who that we added to, that we, you know, I mean, we weren't reinventing anything, but I think there were so many clinicians.
Yes.
Who were going like, what I was taught doesn't feel right. I'm looking for other ways.
Yes.
And so here, I think it was like, everybody was like, yes, thank you. You know? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You know? Yeah.
And it's been really cool.
Yeah.
It's been really cool to be a part of. And I'm really proud.
That's
to gotten to.
You should be. You should be proud. It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. But I also had the pleasure of watching your webinar on the Learn, Play, Thrive Summit that just happened. And I just want to read the title because it is so key. It's Compliance or Connection, Deconstructing and Reframing Social Skills, quote unquote, Social Skills Support for Autistic Individuals. It was such a great presentation and so very needed because that word social and social skills in particular, we just feel that this is so important to talk about, have our listeners hear. And so as an SLP, I absolutely feel the frustration that, you know, you talked about in your presentation. You also had mentioned a lot of the requirements that are kind of listed by Asha. And one thing that really struck me is that autistic people are always having to modify themselves to take care of others. And I just would like you to expand upon that because I think that's...
And yet we don't have any empathy.
Yeah, I know. Oh God, I hate when I hear that because I have never worked with more empathetic people in my entire life.
I'm sure there is one. Or sure. Two. I'm sure they exist, yeah. But I've yet to meet an antisocial autistic person.
Me too.
I have not yet.
Yeah.
And I include all of the that I met and know as friends, people that I have worked with as clients, my own. I've not met one yet.
Yeah. Yeah. it may look different. It may look different, but
absolutely
it doesn't mean that they're not social. It's a different way. And yeah, and I just so important. Such an important
message. I think the thing is that we talk about this thing, social skills, like it's a clear, like it's concrete. Like there are very clear parameters around it. There are not. And I think that then it puts us in a pickle as SLPs because what are we doing? I mean, it ends up being this kind of code of like, socials, you demonstrate these social skills of like, what skill? What am I? What? What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't. Like, and like, so then you're kind of also then doing this work, putting your effort, your caseload, your workload, your energy into working towards something that is nebulous and how are you measuring it? And what is it? And, you know, and the only kind of measurement we end up coming up with is really more like neurotypical, you know, so it ends up being so much more about masking and about the autistic person accommodating other people.
Yep.
And what I talk about in that presentation, and I had an idea about what I was going to talk about in the presentation. And then to do that, I went looking at like, how do we define it? What are these? What are we even talking about?
Yeah.
These socially skills.
Socially.
What is this? So I'm going like looking and it's like really difficult to find and trying to find the social communication disorder. What are we talking about? What does this mean? And trying to get clear definitions and it's not really easy. And then I'm looking at the Asha definition and I'm kind of going, okay, like that's a lot. that's a whole lot to juggle at once. And it's so coded with, you know, caveats above it of like, you know, always practice cultural humility, which is correct. That is,
yes,
but
absolutely. But we're not.
Well, and it's a totally moving target. We can't,
yeah.
I say in the presentation, but it's, you know, standard American English does not exist. There is no such thing as speaking without a dialect. And somebody might say, well, no, if you're in this certain place in Ohio. Nope, that's an Ohio dialect. Sure. That is how they sound. Who decided that that one was standard American English?
Mm.
Who decided that Appalachian was not standard American English?
Right. Right.
A bunch of elite, educated white men decided that,
yeah.
Right? And so they said, this is what standard American English is and sounds like. And that is this dialect, and that is this grammar construction, and that is this. But it doesn't exist. There, it does not happen. Yeah. It is, there is no way of speaking that you do not have an accent or a dialect. Or, and I am an actor. I am trained in non-regional dialect. I know of what I speak. Like, I know how to do it. And the thing is, like, it just doesn't, it's not a thing. And that's the, like, standard social skills. They're not a thing.
Yeah.
We are all going to be influenced by a whole confluence of communities, of identities that will affect how we social and what is considered, you know, what is expected of our socialiness and what other people would determine is normal, right, or typical, you know, like, and I mean, it's going to be influenced by where you live. It's going to be influenced by your culture, by your ethnicity, by your, could be influenced by your religion. It could be influenced by your gender, for sure. It could also be very well be influenced by your just specific communities that you know, I'm like, I think about even just jokes that I just saw yesterday, like somebody shared like a paper. It's like, here's breaking down the new slang for the millennial, you know, like, here is what this new slang is for. And I was like, I don't know what half of these words are. This is good. But like, yeah, but that's the thing. So it's going to be affected by your age. It's going to be affected by like, and now we have this whole really cool kind of linguistic thing where it's like internet memes and GIFs are like becoming a language. Like,
they are becoming a language.
Yeah.
Like, I know.
It's language, yes, is wild. I love it.
I know. Language as well.
But that's the thing, is that like, but what is or isn't acceptable or expected is going to vary by what setting you're in, and it is going to vary by who you are and what comprises all of your identities. And so acting as if we have this one clear norm, I think it sets autistic people up to fail.
Absolutely.
But it sets SLPs up to fail. Like,
well, yeah,
it's not fair.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people out there teaching social skills, and they're very structured skills, like you said, but yet they're really setting, and for that matter, any neurodivergent person doesn't necessarily fit the mold of any of it. And even the one thing that gets me is the back and forth conversation, like that reciprocal conversation. Why does it always have to be like that?
I inherited a conversational turn-taking goal that I just only did it whenever we were talking about whatever the kid wanted to talk about. And I was like, look, they're doing great. Everything's fine. And then I changed it at the next meeting. But like, but the thing is, though, what I said was true. I wasn't lying. I was being completely ethical. When we, yes, were talking about stuff that kid felt completely comfortable and competent in, our conversational turn-taking was completely fine. Now, we also happen to have aligned neurotypes, that was also true, but like, everything was fine. There was complete back and forth, complete exchange,
yeah,
total reciprocity or whatever. I mean, it was all just fine. But if they felt less secure, less knowledgeable, less competent, less comfortable, it wasn't.
Yeah, like small talk.
Like, well, that's also human. Like, I don't know why we need to pathologize that for autistic people, you know, like.
Yes, I'm glad that you said
everybody
that.
Everybody feels uncomfortable.
Yes. I'm glad that you said that, because, I mean, like, I've always been quiet. So in a group of people, I just you know, unless it's a really interesting topic to me or something I feel very well versed in, I'm probably not going to talk. And yeah, that doesn't mean there's something wrong with me. So yeah.
Absolutely not. And that, see, and that brings up a really great point, actually, a conversation that I had with a friend of mine when talking about how you measure social skills, and was like, well, you know, if we're doing something like a, you know, pragmatics profile checklist or something, like I was, this person was saying, like, you know, I was a gay kid in the closet and tried to, you know, I could have come up like that. And I'm like, yep, exactly. Yep. That's exactly the point. Like, we're acting like there's a really clear measure when there isn't. There are clear measures for certain supporting skills, and I think that we can much more effectively focus on those things instead of these, you know, eye contact or turn taking, like, you know, things that are not necessary.
Would you give some examples of some of those supporting skills that you would, you know, how can we best support?
I think that's hard because it's going to vary so much depending on the person, but
it is going to vary.
Yeah, but I think
there is no one.
Yeah, there's no, because we're people and we're very complicated.
Yes.
Sacks of meat. Yeah. We're very complicated. I'm always, I think about there's a Family Guy episode, the scripts that play in my head whenever I say things. And there's a Family Guy episode where they were doing a spoof on American Beauty, and he's like, looks at the plastic bag. He's like, oh, look, do you see the beauty in this? And like, God shouts down. It's like, do you have any idea how complicated your circulatory system is? And like, that's what I think about when I think about humans. Like, do you have any idea how complicated you are? We cannot make this simple. You are very complicated. The fact that you're even breathing is kind of amazing. Like, this is a whole lot of stuff. But I think that there are things, a lot of like executive function things, I think are very reasonable to help. And the thing we know about those is that that's not necessarily going to be teaching you change something. It's going to be teaching you strategies, you know, like, but things like working memory, that could be, if you are, you know, if you are like me, I'm autistic ADHD, and I mean, and a plethora of other things. Mine have been delight at parties and like a disco ball, but of neurodivergences, but I have, you know, two parts of my brain that are like in a constant battle in some ways. And like, I had to have surgery, and I then had to have bed rest. And so I would, like, autistic me was like, this is great. I am so burned out. I'm going to do nothing. And I'm going to just be here in silence. This is wonderful. And ADHD brain was like, nope, too quiet. What's happening? We need to think about things. Let's think some more. Can we go into some more thoughts? Let's have some more thoughts. And autistic's like, please no. Can you just please be quiet? Nope, I sure can't. Let's find another show. You know, like, it was like, there's a fight happening all the time. But the thing is, because of that, like, I could, for example, I could get on a really good info dump and then have no idea what I was about to say. So strategies for things like that, you know, circumlocution, helping you remember, like helping you with working memory. Like, these are things that I think are very helpful.
Yeah.
I also think that the fact is there are times where an autistic person, particularly when they are older and have agency, may come and go, I don't understand this. I need help with this. And in those times, I personally think that there are affirming ways that we can support those people in achieving their goals, but not in teaching them that there's something inherently wrong with them. You know, I think that we can talk to people
absolutely
very directly and openly, and kind of, I think of it as like being kind of an ambassador. It's like kind of an ombudsman. Like, I know this is weird, but the neurotypicals, they say this and they mean this. It's very confusing. But I'm a big proponent. I mean, I have a background in theater, and that is something that I really, but I learned a lot doing theater, like a lot. And I've explained that to my kids, even like to my son, especially, who's older. And I'm like, you know, I know it looks like mom knows what I'm doing, but I'm gonna tell you what, when I was your age, I had no idea. And I think that theater can actually be a really great script analysis, can be an amazing tool, because that has nothing to do with you or anybody else. You could just be looking at characters and going, what are they saying? What do they mean? Ooh, what do they feel? How would they show this thing? Like, these are all really helpful. It just helps you get information about, like, this is how people are doing things. But there's nothing is placed. It's not right or wrong. It's not good or bad. It's just
what this kind of teaching.
Yeah, exactly. It's just teaching. This is what it is. And so then if they have that understanding of subtext and this is how, it's easier to then be able to explain, I know, this is weird, but when they're saying this, what they're really trying to get at is this.
I love that.
And I think that those kind of things can be really helpful for explaining people some kind of basic interactions, job interviews. Like, there are things that can be very helpful skills. We just can't approach them as, like, let me remediate you. We need to approach them more as...
Right, yes.
And when we do that, making sure they really understand the double empathy problem. And they really understand that there's nothing wrong with how they communicate.
Absolutely. I love that.
So I think, I think that I think that sometimes when we first started talking about the neurodiversity movement, which has been around, for a long, 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 long time, but when we really started recognizing it and talking about it in our field, I think that sometimes people felt, I've seen like SLP response sometimes that has been like, but then what am I supposed to are you saying that this person should not have therapy? And I'm like, well, sometimes, but also, like, we can't both have workloads and caseloads that are way too high and also have to have a goal for everybody. Like,
there's a balance.
And so I'm not threatening your job by recognizing that there are multiple ways to communicate. And I think that that's, like, I think that's important for all of us to kind of have some space for, is that, like, when we're feeling maybe discomfort around it, to be able to check out, like, what is this about? You know, what's happening in my person right now? Why am I feeling this way?
That kind of takes me to interoception. Because interoception, that's I do that a lot. I do a lot of interoception with
me. I'm big on interoception.
I love interoception. Well, mainly because I had my own trauma therapy. So basically, that's what it is. I mean, you're learning about your body. You're learning what's happening in your body. I love working with my clients on this because the emotions, wow, so needed, so key. And they don't.
I am a big believer. Yes. I very, very much. And may have something coming on that. But that is kind of like a passion area for me, is that, like, one, there is no communication without regulation. And if I give you communication that you cannot use while you're dysregulated, I might as well give a touch device to somebody who needs eye gaze. It is ineffective. It does not do anything. And I cannot communicate my wants or needs or my feelings if I don't know what they are.
Yes.
It's just like, so we can, so that's the other thing when we talk about social skills. I need you to do this. I need you to do, I don't have even any sense of myself.
Right.
All I'm going to do is plow myself over to do whatever the goal is.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, instead of actually honoring
who you, what you're feeling. Yeah,
exactly. Like, I give this example a lot, but it's because it's true. Like, and I talk about this in terms of also of AAC use and communication access, because that is another thing that I am very passionate about. And that if we write a goal, so it, whether this was a social skills goal for an autistic person, or we were trying to do something like for an AAC user, it happens a lot, like a greetings goal, like they will respond to a greeting or they'll write.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
If I have oral speech, right? I have oral speech. If I'm walking down the road and I see somebody I haven't seen in forever, I might be like, ah!
Yeah.
Right? I might be like, somebody I haven't seen in forever and I really don't want to see you. Just keep walking on this way. No, no, sunglasses up. Nobody sees me. Right? Maybe I see somebody and I'm really tired. I'm not in a mood that day. Maybe I like you, but I'm just not. They say hi and I'm like,
yeah.
You know? We don't dictate.
We don't.
I don't. No human being, as you say hi, no human being is always like, why hello? Like, that just does not happen. You're going to respond however you're going to respond in whatever instant, however, depending on how you are feeling.
Yes.
But if you don't know how you're feeling.
Yes.
You can't
do it. Then we are creating little robots, which is what I like to say, because that's what I see, is lots of little robots walking around.
Yes.
And it doesn't feel, it doesn't look, it doesn't make my heart happy.
No, gosh, you know, I worked with a kid I adored, and at some point that poor child had had an eye contact goal, because this was a teenager, and that's all the time. I'm like, hi, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
My eyes are drying out. What are we? You can blink.
Yeah.
Are you safe? You know, like, what? But that's the thing is, but so here's another example, though, is that you're teaching us something that is contrary to our cultural norm, that's contrary to what feels right in our body. So then what you get is this really strange eyeball behavior. Like, okay, am I doing it now?
Yeah.
Eyeball. You know, like, what?
I agree so much. And I work mainly with middle school and up. So I have a lot of the already
my favorites.
Love them. Yes. But a lot of trained of that eye contact. And I have trouble with eye contact myself. I look around. I can make eye contact if someone's talking to me, but if I'm sharing a story, my eyes seem to like go in different places. That's just
Well, and that's the thing is that again, this comes back to this coding of like eye contact. Where are the eye contact norms? I'll wait. Because there aren't. Because they are highly dependent on culture.
Yeah.
Highly dependent on gender. What degree of eye contact is acceptable for a man versus what is acceptable? This is very different. Very different things. Eye contact is going to be affected by multiple neurodivergences. We always talk about autism, but it's absolutely going to be affected by anxiety, depression. I mean, all ADHD, all kinds of things could be affecting.
Yes.
So, like, eye contact, whatever. But, like, sometimes, well, we need to be, like, make sure somebody has your attention. You know, is that something I've encountered where somebody just kind of picks up and you're like, whoa, hold on. I missed the train. What's happening?
I agree.
Catch me up. You know, like, sure, making sure of that. But then also a perfectly worthy goal is communication repair in those moments so that the onus is not just on that person. You know, like, woo!
I love this.
Yeah, exactly. Hold on, I missed it. Catch me up. What did I miss? And then they can go back and tell me, you know. Oh, thank you. Okay.
Absolutely.
Great. Please continue.
So agree with all of that.
Thank you for tuning in to part one of my conversation with Caroline Gaddy. Be sure to join us next week for part two, where Caroline discusses the window of tolerance, masking as a nuanced conversation, stimming, and much more. Don't miss it.
We love hearing from you. So if you have questions, comments, or just want to connect, you can find our links to LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram on our show notes. Feel free to drop us a message, leave us a comment, or ask a question, or just share your thoughts with us. Your thoughts matter, and we can't wait to hear from you.